are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
I think we'll get started. I'd like to begin with acknowledgement of country this morning. We acknowledge the Kaurna people and also the Permanang people in the Adelaide Hills. They are the landowners from a long time ago. We recognise the Kaurna people and the Permanang people as being still alive. We recognise their leaders, past, present and future. And we acknowledge that the land that we are on this morning, the Kaurna Plains and the Adelaide Hills, are traditionally their lands. Welcome to the service of worship. It's called a service because it's meant to serve you, and it is worship because it raises to worth things that matter. This is a radically inclusive spiritual community that's been meeting since 1854, and we welcome everyone. It doesn't matter what God or gods you believe in or don't, and are not sure about. It doesn't matter how you gender identify, it doesn't matter what political leanings or affiliations you have, and it doesn't matter who you love or prefer to make love with. No matter who you are, you will find this a community that supports you in finding, fashioning, and following your own spiritual path. Whatever path helps you to see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all people.
Omicron virus seems to be affecting the throat and the nose. The latest medical advice is it affects that, and so it's easily spread. So I think it's very important for us to keep those orifices closed so that we don't share them with everybody and keep everybody safe. I'd like to read this poem to you by Arlen Joff. Thresholds, we cross them every day, from room to room, from outside to inside, and back again, and from here to there, from anywhere to everywhere, from age to age. Each threshold offers an opportunity for change, for renewal, for transformation, from what we were and what we are to what we can be. In this hour and in this place, we cross a threshold from our day-to-day everydayness into space and time, attuned to the other, to the sacred, to the holy, in an awareness of new life, pregnant with possibilities. How will we be renewed in this moment? How will we be changed by this hour? How will we be transformed through this gathering of beloved community? Come, you longing, thirsty souls. Come, let us worship together. Welcome to this morning's service. It's going to be a little different today. There is no long address, but I have several readings. We'll share them with you, and there'll be a time for reflection after each reading. So I guess we don't believe in bunyips. We accept that they are a mythical being. But in Aboriginal culture, they have a deeper meaning than that, and I wanted to share that with you this morning. I got this book from the Anamantha people earlier in the year when we went up to Arkaroola, and we stopped up at a township not far from Arkaroola that they run, and this book was there, and I'll just read from it. Others say bunyip is so big he can be mistaken for a mountain, so the size is there in that story, but truth to tell, very few ever see him up close. Koala, the only person who ever wished to befriend him, was punished for her deeds. He now remains in the coldest, dreariest parts of the swamp and rises only in the mist, when he can stay clothed in cloud and appear less frightening to others. Through his own tribulations, Bunyip can understand and appreciate the pain of others. He can possibly see further than those who have led a charmed life, for it is only when we have ourselves suffered and solved an apparently insurmountable problem that we can become open to the world's sorrow. In many ways,
A meeting with Bunyip suggests emergence of new feeling for others on a larger scale. If you have encountered him today, you may be embarking on a quest to integrate this kind of meaning in your life. This can be a curious, belated healing process. It may also require that you deepen your existing commitment to a faith or inquire into a new belief system to answer the enigma of yourself. Most probably, you'll add to your relationship with the creator beings in a number of ways. You see, the spiritual communion Bunyip offers is not a prescriptive, dogmatic, collective, cure-all formula for sadness, but a very intimate, individual knowledge. The panacea comes from your own personal life experience, the priest within, and takes place patch by mismatch patch, step by little step, one day at a time. This morning, people are remembering Archbishop Tutu, who died earlier this week. I'd just like to take a moment for us to acknowledge his presence in the world and the sense of loss that he's left. He lived from October 1931 until December 2021, the 26th of December. A real sense of loss and gratitude for the life of Desmond Tutu, South Africa's 1984 Nobel Peace Prize winning activist for racial justice and LGBT rights. He was a tireless champion in the fight for equality and justice, an inspiration, a hero, a peacemaker who walked among us. He always led with hope, truth, and courage, a man whose great wisdom and moral compass was matched only by his love and devotion to helping others. He was loved, admired, and thanked for his selfless servant leadership to his country and to the world. What a life of service he lived for the dignity and equality of all people, and what a legacy he's left behind. I'll now light a candle in his remembrance and we'll have a minute's silence to reflect on him. I thought it'd be timely now to have a meditation, and what I'll do is read this poem from Erica Hewitt, Minister of Worship Arts, and she heads that division in the States. This is a season of endings and beginnings, when the small signs of dawn pierce through the night and something new is born. But first comes the waiting. First comes the lessons of endings and beginnings. The presence of life, the sheltering spirit of love, grieves with those sweeping up the debris of loss, waits with those who restlessly reach out for change, grants us courage in the night to guard each other's dreams for this holy, wondrous universe. Grant us, O universe, unfolding in mystery, a sense of your timing. May we loosen our grip on that which doesn't serve us, leaving behind that which we have outworn or outgrown. Teach us the lessons of beginnings. Remind us that such waitings and endings may be a starting place, a planting of seeds which bring to birth what is ready to be born. Something right and just and different. A new song, a deeper relationship, a fuller love in the fullness of time. Thank you. As I mentioned before, the service will be a little different in that there will be no main address. Instead, there are some readings from a variety of sources, many of which are from the UUA, with remarks or comments and an opportunity to reflect on the readings. The topic connecting the various aspects of the service today is reflections. And at this time of the year, it is something that seems to be what we are encouraged to do when the topic of New Year's resolutions is mentioned. How many of you already made your New Year's resolutions? See, I see head shaking. Some heads. Go on. I think the older you get, maybe the more New Year's you've faced, and the number of New Year's resolutions that haven't been worked on have grown, and so we get out of the habit of doing that. I believe that many of us see the changing from one year to another as a new beginning, a new opportunity. How many people look at it that way? You know, the old is gone, the new is coming, and we've got this new clean slate. Yeah. And often a blank page where we have the chance to improve ourselves in areas of our lives such as personal relationships, financial affairs, dietary habits, or in spiritual matters. Moving from something in the past that needs some work to the future where improvements can be made. That is why the name of the month, January, is so apt. Janus, the two-faced god of the Romans, who is arguably one of their most important gods in the Roman pantheon of gods, was credited with the ability, while standing in the present, to see back into the past and at the same time see forward into the future. By doing this, it was believed that he could affect the present. And so many Romans practiced that on a daily basis, not at a new year time, not at the summer solstice or winter solstice in their case, but every day when something new happened, a new phase of their life, even entering a door, and on many doors they had the symbol of Janus above. So they were reminded of that new beginning that was about to take place. Through the readings and the time for reflection, I hope that we will be able to look from the past, imagine the future, and in doing this, be guided in our actions in the present. And I'll start with the first reading this morning. I don't know if many of you have read this book, Parting Words, by Benjamin Ferrance, an American citizen. When he wrote this book, he was 100 years old, and he wanted to record his life as a lesson so that other people could learn from his lessons that he'd learnt during life. He had immigrated to America and had a fairly impoverished beginning, but he was very able intellectually. And a teacher in his elementary school in Brooklyn identified him as such and enabled him to go to a gifted and talented school, we'd call it here, but a school for those students who had that ability. He said he had an interesting brain. He had one of these minds that would just soak in information. He'd only have to read it once or hear something once, and it'd be stuck in the brain. So he finished up in this school where most of the teachers were professors, and he was 12 years of age, and being asked to study subjects like French and algebra, and he wasn't doing very well at that. Anyway, he says, "I only became interested in French when I fell in love with a beautiful French girl called Danielle Darrieux. She was an Ingrid Bergman type movie star whose films were shown on nearby arts theatre. She would be wooed by Charles Boyer. I kept one eye on her and another on the English subtitles. That was a wonderful teaching tool. And while I came out sounding like Charles Boyer, it made my French professor's explanation of the Battle of the Marne more tolerable. I went on to become a valued interpreter, and after the war, even translated for René Cassin, the French Nobel Prize-winning author of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, who was on tour in the United States, all from falling in love with a French girl, but she was beautiful. It's a lesson for all of us that you can learn where you are. When you watch a film, read a book, walk along a street, have a conversation, don't be passive about it. Everything you do is an opportunity to learn something new, and you never know when that knowledge will come in handy. Time for reflection on those words. The next one I'd like to read to you is a poem by Daniel Worsop, another UUA minister from Ventura, California. And she writes, "I want to be with people." And I think at this time of COVID, we all want to be with people and not having to ask people to leave our presence. Often people say that they love coming to a place with so many like-minded people. I know just what they are getting at. And I know that they aren't getting it quite right. I don't want to be with a bunch of people who think just like me. I want to be in a beloved community where I don't have to think like everyone else to be loved, to be eligible for salvation. I want to be with people who value compassion, justice, love, and truth, though they have different thoughts and opinions about all sorts of things. I want to be with independent-minded people of good heart. I want to be with people who have many names and no name at all for God. I want to be with people who see in me goodness and dignity, who also see my failings and my foibles, and who still love me. I want to be with people who feel their interconnection with all existence and let it guide their footfalls upon the earth. I want to be with people who see life as a paradox and not always rush to solve it. I want to be with people who are willing to walk the tightrope that is life and will hold my hand as I walk mine. I want to be with people who let church call them into a different way of being in the world. I want to be with people who support, encourage, and even challenge each other to higher and more ethical living. I want to be with people who inspire one another to follow the call of the Spirit. I want to be with people who covenant to be honest, engaged, and kind, who strive to keep their promises and hold me to the promises I make. I want to be with people who give of themselves, who share their hearts and minds and gifts. I want to be with people who know that human community is often warm and generous, sometimes challenging, and always, almost, grand adventure. In short, I want to be with people like you. And I think those thoughts, that reflects our community really well. I think one of the things that is very, very valuable, and Jenny I know has given a service on hope and how important it is to have hope, even in the most trying of times. But what does that mean? And I think Jenny covered that anyhow, but it's good to reflect back on that. And this poem by Victoria Safford, I think, covers it fairly well. The Gates of Hope. Our mission is to plant ourselves at the gates of hope, not the prudent gates of optimism, which are somewhat narrower, not the stalwart, boring gates of common sense, nor the strident gates of self-righteousness, which creak on the shrill and angry hinges. People cannot hear us there, they cannot pass through, nor the cheerful, flimsy garden gate of everything's going to be all right, but a different, sometimes lonely place, the place of truth-telling about your own soul, first of all, and its condition, the place of resistance and defiance, the piece of ground from which you see the world, both as it is and as it could be and as it will be. The place from which you glimpse not only struggle, but the joy of the struggle. And we stand there, beckoning and calling, telling people what we are seeing, asking people what they see. I know over the years I've used quotes from Deepak Chopra's book, the Book of Secrets. I don't know if anybody else has a copy of this or reads it. He's a very wise Eastern guru. And I'd just like to read his thoughts about time and how we use time. Most of us take for granted that time flies, meaning that it passes too quickly. But in the mindful state, time doesn't really pass at all. There is only a single instant of time that keeps renewing itself over and over with infinite variety. The secret about time, then, is that it exists only as we usually think of it. Past, present and future are only mental boxes for things we can't but want to keep close or far from us. And by saying that time flies, we conspire to prevent reality from coming too close. Is time a myth we are using for our own convenience? Books are written extolling the virtues of living in the present moment. There is a good reason for this, because the mind's burdens come from the past. By itself, memory is weightless, and time should be too. What people call the now is actually the disappearance of time as a psychological obstacle. When the obstacle is removed, you are no longer burdened by the past or the future. You found the mindful state and happiness too, the kind that needs neither words nor thoughts. What makes time a psychological burden is ourselves. We have convinced ourselves that experiences are built up over time. We say things like, I'm older than you, I know what I'm talking about. Or, I've been around the block a few times. Or, listen to the voice of experience. Or, pay attention to your elders. These formulas make a virtue out of experience accumulated not with insight or alertness, but simply by hanging around. Mostly they are futile expressions, however. We all know at some level that carrying around a heavy suitcase of time is what makes people grey. Or bald, perhaps. To live in the present moment means dropping the suitcase, not carrying it with you. But how is this done? In the one reality, the only time on the clock is now. The trick to dropping the past is to find out how to live now as if it was forever. Photons move at Planck time, which matches the speed of light, while galaxies evolve over billions of years. So if time is a river, it must be a very deep one, and broad enough to contain the least speck of time and the infinity of timelessness. This implies that now is more complex than it looks. If you stop and think about that for a minute, in the now, what is the now? Every second that's moved has become the past, and now we're in the future already, but we still are in the now. It is a very complex thing. Are you in the now when you're most active and energized, or when you're most still? When do you feel like you're in the now? Take a look at a river. On the surface, the current is fast and restless. At the middle depths, the flow slows down until one reaches the bottom, where the silt is only slightly stirred before you touch bedrock, where the motion of water no longer has any effect. The mind is capable of participating at every level of the river. You can run with the fastest current, which most people try to do in their everyday lives. Their version of now is, whatever's to be done has to be done right now. For them, the present moment contains constant drama. Time equals action, just as it does on the surface of the river. And I wonder which one you fit into. And lastly, I'd like to share this poem with you. Another one from another minister in the States who comes from Alaska. Her name is Leslie Ahuva Fales, and she is in Fairbanks, Alaska. She's also served as a hospital chaplain. All that we have been separately and all that we will become together is stretched out before and behind us like stars scattered across a canvas of sky. We stand at the precipice, arms locked, together like tandem skydivers, working up the courage to jump. Tell me, friends, what have we got to lose? Our fear or our failure? Our mistrust of our own talents? What have we got to lose? A poverty of the spirit? The lie that we are alone? What wonders await us in the space between the first leap and the moment our feet, our wills, however we move our bodies across this precious earth, touch down softly on unknown soil? What have we got to lose that we can't replace with some previously unimaginable joy? Blessed are you, Spirit of Life, who has sustained us, enlivened us, and enabled us to reach this moment. Give us courage on our leaping and gratitude on our landing, and share with us the joy of a long and fruitful ministry together. So ends our service this morning. But just before the benediction, I wish you all a happy new year, and may you find hope, peace, joy, and the knowledge that you're not on this journey alone. And through this beloved community, we can support each other no matter what comes throughout this year. We can be there for each other. Please stand as you're able for the benediction. Spirit of life and love, Spirit of holding on, Spirit of letting go. Help us to attune to what our lives whisper to us, both the sweet words of commitment and the sweet words of release. Help us to know whether it's time to hold tightly or a time to let go. Help us to learn that in each moment there is beauty. May it be so. Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.